Call the Senate Resource Committee to order. Today is Monday, May 8th, 2023. The time is 4:01 p.m. Please silence all cell phones. Let's see, Co-Chair Geisel, welcome. Vice Chair Wilikowski, Senator Klayman, Senator Dunbar, Senator Kaufman's going to be ladies on other state business. Senator Kawasaki, I know he's diligently working on another piece of legislation. Myself, Co-Chair Bishop, we do have a quorum to do business. And I'd like to thank Carrie Cooperwriter and Amanda Kraft. Two bills before us today, refined fuel surcharge, SB 137, HB 104, expedited timber sales by Representative Kronk. So we will start with SB 137, refined fuel surcharge. This is the second hearing. We've had a previous amendment deadline, and one amendment was received. That brings us to amendment number one.
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number one, 33LS0768/Bravo 2.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion and amendment introduction.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, there is a U.S. flagged company, barge company, that transports fuel to Skagway. From there, it goes on a U.S. Licensed trucking firm and is trucked into Yukon territory. This amendment proposes that that U.S. flagged company be exempted from paying this tax because the fuel is not going to be used in the U.S.
Thank you. And questions from committee members? Seeing none, I'll remove my objection. And we do have Brandon Spanos, Deputy Division of Tracks, online if anybody would like to ask him a question. And, Senator, do you remove your objection?
I didn't object, Mr. Chairman.
Good idea.
And
I removed
your objection.
Removed
it.
I'm reading a script. We've been busy today.
Sorry. So I just wanted to pose the question to Mr. Spanos.
Sure.
If he could articulate the financial impact of the amendment, please.
Mr. Spanos, did you hear the co-chair's question to you?
Yes, for the record, Brandon Spanos, Deputy Director with the Tax Division. And I did hear the question. However, due to how few taxpayers it would impact, we have a taxpayer confidentiality issue. I know there was a public testimony. If the public testifier gave a public number, we could do an analysis. But all we have available to us is confidential taxpayer information. Okay. And unless we can aggregate multiple taxpayers together, we can't release a number for the impact.
Gotcha. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Senator Dunbar?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Does that mean that the fiscal note that will go on to the Finance Committee will not reflect the impact of this amendment?
Through the chair, we will amend if the amendment passes a new CS, we will amend, give a new fiscal note, but it will just simply state that there will be a negative impact to revenue, but it's indeterminate based on taxpayer confidentiality.
And for the committee, we're not moving this bill today, so we will see the fiscal note before it moves, if and when it does move to finance. Senator Wilikowski,
can I just, for revenue, where exactly, or when exactly, by whom exactly is the tax paid? Is it paid at the refiner level? Is it paid at the gas pump level?
Through the chair, Senator, it's a on the distributor, so it's when it's a distributor level tax. So at the point of when it's sold from the distributor to the retailer.
Thank you.
Seeing no further questions, and I did remove my objection, amendment number one does pass. We're going to set this bill aside. And next up, we're going to talk HB 104 timber. So Representative Kronk and Mr. Stancliffe would like to come to the table and put yourselves on the record.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mike Kronk, Representative.
Sorry, thank you. We're back. We're good to go.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Representative Mike Kronk, District 36, and my staff.
Dave Stankla, staff to Representative Kronk.
Okay, and this is the second hearing of HB 104. We had prior kept the public testimony open, and it's still open. So I don't see anyone here in the room to testify. So at this time, I'm going to close public testimony. And we've had some questions. Your office and my office have been working together on a couple of things. So we'd like you to just, again, briefly reintroduce the bill to us on, I think the section we're honing in on is the expedited sales. And then we can have some questions that are going to be asked here of the committee members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dave Stancliffe, staff to Representative Kronk. We've addressed and looked at a number of questions with regard to what this bill does, and we've actually seen fit and a necessity to look at what it doesn't do. Perhaps if I just go over those things that we looked at, and then committee members can zero in on where they might still have questions, that would maybe move things along. The first is what are the current types of timber sales, which is an educational process. What overall does HB 104 do? What is the current salvage sale process? And how does the bill propose to change that process? And do these changes to the salvage section allow the commissioner to give a sweetheart deal? Do these changes to the salvage sale process deny the public the right to object to a sale? Are expedited timber sales in current law? How does this bill change expedited timber sales? Why is this new process necessary? Is the authority provided in this bill too broad, as the entire state is at risk of fire or insect infestation in many areas? And does the phrase "the commissioner is not required to notice an expedited timber sale under this section violate the Constitution?" And tying into that, a question that had been brought to Representative Kronk's attention, he asked me to research and get some current information. The constitutionality with regard to best interest finding and the constitutionality with regard to public notice. The concerns that you as public officials and I should say the assembly for the rural areas, since we're unorganized, have to concern yourselves with is there enough opportunity for the public to weigh in when it looks like there's going to be some pretty rapid taking of timber? And the bill, HB 104, tries to streamline the process in ways that allow the commissioner to move rapidly, but not to erase public notice, or not to erase best interest findings, but instead to have a set of criteria that he can't go willy-nilly and decide he wants to cut timber all over the state of Alaska. I don't think anybody would perceive that a commissioner would do that, and I think Mr. Elgay suggested the same thing. So the question then becomes, if we're legally and constitutionally sound, it's a policy question on whether this is going to be beneficial to the state. And what Representative Kronk has tried to do with beetle infestation and forest fire dangers living in an area in the Upper Tanana is to point out that this is going to take timber that would burn and put pollutants into the air and cause stream erosion and damage, as well as beetle infestation in the Mat-Su Valley, and get a use out of the timber before it becomes unusable and too big a threat to the communities that have to live in constant fire danger. The question that probably no legislator can resolve is whether or not we trust the commissioner and the state forester to use good judgment, follow Article 8 of the section of the Constitution, and make sure that the public interest is properly served. And that's a question that's extremely legitimate. And the feeling that we have looking at what's been done in the Tanana Valley State Forest, which is huge, and it could have been managed in a poor way in terms of harvest of timber, just the opposite has happened. I happened to be around when the forest was formed, and I recall the debate and the promises why the environmental community signed on and really supported that under Betty Fahrenkamp, Senator Fahrenkamp. So when you look at what's been done, which is far less than what was promised and could be improved to such an extent, then it's a question that each legislator has to ask themselves whether or not they feel we could do much better while the safeguards are there that need to be there. And so with that, if there's any specific questions, we can take them and try to resolve them here or do further research, but I appreciate the time and the committee's attention for the questions.
So just for every committee member should have in their bill packet the memo from our ledge legal, and we got a FAQ sheet from Senator Cronk's office. We do have some more support letters from the chambers and the Alaska Forest Association. So just want to make sure members have seen those in their bill packets. So, specific questions of the bill sponsor?
Either the bill sponsor or his. I have questions.
Senator Klayman.
First, I want to go back to the provisions in the legislation that change the structure on salvage sales. And under the current structure, have there been problems, say, with a fire damage stand of timber? Have there been problems getting a best interest findings that are apparently required under 3805.035E in getting those done in a timely manner so they can actually have this do the timber sale in a timely way? I mean,
And we do have Helgi Ng, State Division of Forestry, online, and we have also Alpheus Bullard from our ledge legal is online for questions as well. So would you like me to direct that to Director Ng?
That's a state forester question to answer, Mr. Chair, Dave Sample.
Mr. Ng, did you hear Senator Klayman's question? And if not, I can have him repeat it.
Helgi Ng, Director of Divisional Forest and Fire Protection and State Forester. If you could repeat the question, that would be appreciated.
Sure, Mr. Ng. Specific to start out, let's start with fire damaged timber. Has the state had any difficulty making these best interest findings in a timely way so they can sell the timber before it loses its merchantable value?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, we choose to believe that we have not. We are capable of producing a best interest finding in a fairly short period of time for salvage timber sales and get the public input and also salvage the timber before it rots on the stump.
And is follow up? Is that also true with respect to the? Is that also true with respect to beetle kill and other insect damaged timber that hasn't been subject to fire that you're selling as a salvage sale?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, yes, that applies to all salvage, whether it's fire or insects.
Follow up. So is it fair to say that when you actually identify something that fits the current statutory definition of a salvage sale and it's all timber that needs to be harvested in a two-year window to maintain value, that you're able to get the best interest findings and get the sale processed in a timeline that allows you to sell the timber and get what value there is for it.
Through the chair, Senator Clayman, that is correct. Yes, the limitation is typically not the process, but access and other logistical limitations, distance.
Follow? Yeah. What do you mean by access and other limitations?
Through the chair, Senator Clayman, access means if there are roads to the timber that it can be hauled out, and distance means how far do you have to haul the damaged timber in order to get it to a processing facility. Typically, we do not have a lot of demand for salvaged timber.
Senator Kawasaki has been here for quite some time, and he has a question. And then I want to come back to a comment you made.
This is a different question, and I don't know if Alpheus can answer it. It's regarding this. It's regarding the legal services memo dated May 8th on the constitutionality from Representative McKay's office. On the second page, second paragraph, it talks about what the commissioners shall do, and the constitutional notice and public interest, public trust. It says that the commissioner has broad authority under that to adopt regulations to ensure that it's done to address the constitutional notice. So for the legal drafter, I'm sort of just unclear what that means. And then I have a follow-up question to that.
So you're directing that question?
Whoever wants to answer it, I guess.
Legal, I believe, Mr. Chairman, Robert. Dave Stancliffe is on the line.
Mr. Bullard, can you hear us? And did you hear Senator Kawasaki's question? Mr. Bullard, Legislative Legal, are you there?
This is Alpheus Bullard of Legislative Legal Services. Are you able to hear me?
We are now, sir. Senator Kawasaki, would you restate your question?
Sure, Mr. Bullard. This has to do with the memo dated May 8th from Representative Tom McKay, page 2, paragraph 2. It talks a little bit about how the commissioner will hold a salvage sale. That the sale will still have to address constitutional notice, public interest, public trust. And then it says that the commissioner has broad authority to adopt regulations. Can you kind of explain what that process would mean for this bill if it were adopted?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, I think the process would simply be that if this bill is enacted, that the commissioner could adopt regulations ensuring that constitutional requirements are met in regard to the salvage sales under the bills 3805-117.
And then follow up. And then, Mr. Bullard, what if the regulations are adopted and they don't meet requirements under constitutional notice or public interest? What's the release valve? How would somebody protest it? What sort of laws regarding regulations and adoption regulations are there?
Through the chair, once again, this is Alpheus Bullard of Legislative Legal Services. If the Commissioner of Natural Resources elects to hold a bill, hold a timber sale, a salvage timber sale, if this bill is enacted, the department is going to have to comply with applicable constitutional requirements. If the sale does not comply with applicable requirements, litigation will likely commence, and that would be the safety valve.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and So I'm going to ask a question on salvage. I think I'll have other questions about expedited that I think we'll get to. But starting with the salvage questions, and in this legal memo, they state, because these salvage sales are intended to salvage timber that will lose substantial economic value if not harvested for a relatively short time, I don't think exemption on its face is unconstitutional. So the fact that it's going to lose economic value is important in this legal memo, and I think it's also important to me and to the general public that, you know, if trees have been destroyed by fire or by beetle kill, I don't think it's very controversial to have them removed and sold quickly via salvage. And there's this, you know, if not salvage within 2 years. I like that sort of retrospective, you know, nature of this. What does concern me, though, is that there also appears to be kind of a prospective nature to the salvage. And what I mean by that is if you look at Section 8 and what it's adding here, so Bravo 1, 2, 3, it says has been killed by fire, has been removed for conversion of land for non-forest use. That to me seems fine, has been killed by fire, whatnot. But the third section to me is concerning, cleared as part of a fire prevention or suppression activity. And so I think that maybe this is a question for the state forester. You know, I remember there was a fire that I worked on in Central. I think it was the Wolf Creek fire. And there were these big swaths of land that were cleared using bulldozers, you know, because the fire was a day out, you know, and so they cleared out that land, which totally makes sense to me. That was prevention, suppression. That was trying to save parts of this town. I think it would be difficult to salvage that wood. I mean, it was just destroyed by bulldozers. They dug this big muddy rut. That to me, again, seems fine. My question, I guess, to the state forester is how far out could the fire prevention or suppression activity be? So, for example, you could say, well, you know, there are fires around this community. You know, we haven't had one in a decade or so, but there could be in the future. So we're going to, as fire suppression activity, clear all the forest around this area and justify it using the salvage provision. And if you could do that, then I'm worried that you'll get this creeping economic interest that will maybe start to color the fire suppression interest. That is to say, you know, the people making decision about whether this is actual fire suppression, because it's so far out in the future, there's no actual fire burning, will sort of work with economic interest to say, well, it could prevent a fire in the future and you need some wood, and so we're going to shortcut we're going to go around the normal process and we're going to clear out a big swath of land. Is that possible? I guess the question is for the state forester.
Director Ng, did you hear Forrest Dunbar's question? There was a lot in there, but.
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, I think I understand the question. And there is a meaningful distinction between fire prevention, which is proactively going in and putting fuel breaks around communities, and fire suppression, which is what you do when the fire is actively going across the landscape and you're trying to put the fire out. In the first case, where there is no fire, we have, in the case, in fact, of Toke, we have 300-foot wide fuel breaks around part of the town. These are fairly sizable fuel breaks. We actually prefer to sell them as timber sales rather than incurring public funds to pay people to do them. We think that's a win-win. And I don't think we'll ever be in the situation where the monetary temptation to make fuel breaks a lot wider than 300 feet is there, because it becomes a fairly involved logistical project. In the case of fire suppression, we have existing statutes that allow us to remove fuel stands between a running fire and a community. So the question there is really one of getting the equipment to the location at the right time.
Follow-ups, yeah. Senator Dunbar?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay, so you already do these fire breaks, and you already do them as timber sales. So what does this bill change for you in that regard?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, is the question, what does HB 104 change?
Yeah, so the argument is being made that this is part of, you know, this makes communities safer because it allows for these additional sales. But it sounds like you already do that. So what's the actual change that this bill will make for your fire prevention activities?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, if you don't mind, I'd like to send that question to Representative Kronk.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I don't think this is inappropriate. I mean, Representative Kronk, obviously I'd love to hear from you as well, but I'd like to hear from the state forester and the people who are actually doing the fire prevention work, how this bill would change their activities.
Director Ng, do you want to noodle on that and get back to the committee at the next hearing with that question, if you're not prepared to answer it today?
Chair Bishop, certainly, we'll be happy to do that.
Okay, so, Senator Dunbar, we bring this bill up. The next hearing, we'll have a response. So, are you're done there? I'm going to.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Senator Klein.
So, Mr. Ng, if you could, in addition to following up and responding to Senator Dunbar's question, in the last response you gave to one of my questions, you talked about access and distance. And as I understood, access was, are there roads to get to the timber? And distance is, even if there are roads, how long are the roads? Because the number of roads and how long the roads are directly goes to whether anybody would even bid on the timber sale if it was perfectly wonderful timber. But if you could provide, you can testify now, but if you want to just follow up with in the response you get to Senator Dunbar, I'd like to have a little better understanding about this access and distance question, because I've been concerned about this legislation in that my general sense is that you have a hard time selling some of the timber that might be appealing just because access and distance makes it no longer interesting to anybody that would ever buy it. And if it was fire damaged or spruce damaged, there still wouldn't be much interest because of those same access and distance questions. And so I'd appreciate, in addition to the question Senator Dunbar raised, I'd like you to add in some discussion about access and distance as that goes into that very question about how would this legislation change what you're doing today, and are you essentially prevented from doing any timber sales today that you could actually successfully sell as opposed to sales that might be interesting, but the reality is nobody would bid on them.
I'd just like to add on to Senator Klayman's question, Director. To his question, access and distance, and he gets into stumpage value, I think is where you're going with that. Maybe the stumpage value is that there is no stumpage value, that this bill would encourage someone to go out there and harvest it and then be able to pass the savings along, hopefully, to the homeowners for the saw logs. So that's just my...
Yeah.
Dovetailing on to Senator Klayman's question, and then Director Ng, if you'd like to comment.
Through the chair, Chair Bishop and Senator Dunbar. First of all, as you requested, regarding salvage, I think it's important to recognize we already do that under existing statute successfully. Regarding your second question about access and distance, I agree with Chair Bishop. There is really three elements to it. The triple curses of Alaska forestry, as I like to say. One is finding high quality green saw timber. Number two, within an economical hauling distance to a sawmilling facility. And number three, finding access to it in the first place. And those three are often formidable odds, so that even though we may have by far the largest timberland base in the nation, that is also a curse in terms of cost of getting to that timber. And it really is a broader issue than House Bill 104, and it gets at the governor's attempt to grow the timber sector in Alaska. And it's not something we do overnight, but a combination of strategic investments and opportunities will probably pay off over time, and turning unmanaged remote forests into managed forests with road access.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This question for Alpheus Bullard. Your opinion on the bottom last paragraph on page one says that a disposal of state resources must be noticed. And if you turn to page nine of the U.A version, line one, it says the commissioner is not required to notice an expedited timber sale. And I'm just, maybe I missed it, maybe you said it, but can you explain why that provision would be in there and how that is constitutional?
Members of the committee, Senator Clayman through the chair. Forgive me, Senator Clayman, which provision were you asking about in the bill?
This is Senator Wilikowski had the question, Mr. Bullard.
It's page 9, line 1 through 2, where it says the commissioner is not required to notice an expedited timber sale. I'm trying to understand how that comports with your memo, which says a disposal of state resources must be noticed.
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, it's explained by the next line. It's qualifying notice under 3805.113. Which is a provision that provides for certain notice of timber sales every 2 years on a five-year schedule, and it's for regular timber harvests of the held by the department. It doesn't prohibit or doesn't exempt the commissioner from all notice requirements.
Follow-up, Senator Wilikowski?
What sort of notice would be required then in this sort of expedited timber sale?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, you know, every circumstance is different, and what would be appropriate to provide reasonable notice to most people that one of these sales is taking place. This work draft leaves the details of that notice to the commissioner to decide.
Senator Wilikowski, that means what follow-up?
I do, yeah. Thank you. That's appreciate that answer. And then the next one says disposal state resources, again, in your opinion, must be in the best interest of the state. And then on page 7, lines 1 through 4, and I know you addressed this a little bit in your opinion, but I just want to have it understood a little better in my mind. It says the commissioner may, without making a written finding that the disposal will serve the best interests of the state, may offer for salvaged sale timber.
Through the chair, this is Alpheus Bullard of Ledge Legal. If you're asking for an explanation of those lines, these lines are also reflected in the second section of the bill that amends 3805.035E, which removes the written best interest finding, which is a procedural rules provided by AS 3805.035E for disposals of state resources. And this exempts these sales from that procedural process.
Follow up.
So, maybe I'm not following you. Your memo says disposal of state resources must be in the best interest of the state, and this says the commissioner doesn't have to make a written finding that they're in the best interest of the state. I need a little better explanation.
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, nothing that we put in statute or don't put in statute relieves the commissioner in this instance from the constitutional obligation to notice these sales, to make sure that they are consistent with the best interests of the state, and that they are consistent with the public trust doctrine. As a legislative drafter, I recommend procedural rules. You know, it benefits due process, it avoids arbitrary results. But if we don't use a particular process here, that is the written best interest finding process provided by 3805-035E, it's not a facial constitutional issue. Well, let's say it's not unconstitutional and they raise the issue, but if these sales are being noticed properly and people are aware that they are occurring and are able to respond, then I believe that constitutional notice provisions are going to be met.
So like you said, this is, Chair Bishop, going back to your earlier statement, I don't know, 10 or 15 minutes ago, still doesn't preclude somebody from filing a lawsuit if they think it is unconstitutional. Senator Kawasaki.
Yeah, I had a question. I guess this is for Alpheus, because I heard you mention about the requirement to notice, and you said something about that folks would be notified. I guess, you know, we're dealing with another bill in another committee I'm working on, and it has to do with publicly noticing when land sales are happening in particular areas. And I'm curious, will people, if it's in a, I guess, people who have trapping cabins in an area or land near the area, will they be notified, or how, I guess, what's that process in notifying a person who might have a stake in the area but not live physically in that particular area?
Through the chair, once again, this is Alpheus responding to Senator Kawasaki's question. Not to punt, but a process is not provided for this bill. Those seem like reasonable people to be notified. There is a process provided to notify people by our written best interest finding, but here the bill leaves those decisions to the commissioner. So notice would be consistent with what the commissioner provides. You know, the committee is free to amend the bill to provide a specific process, but if not, the commissioner will determine who should be notified and how that should occur. And again, that will be a final agency determination that can be subject to a challenge in the Superior Court.
And follow up?
And follow up, just through the chair. And that's so when we talk about sort of the broad authority that the commissioner might have, that is where those decisions will be made, is that sort of broad authority that we're granting to the commissioner of Department of Natural Resources. And I'll just say I've got no problem with the commissioner. We're going to confirm him tomorrow, I have no doubt, like the guy, but just want to make sure that that's what we're talking about when we say broad authority under that title.
Senator Kawasaki, once again, this is it's legal. And through the chair, I think that's accurate. Remember that these timber sales, are these particular sales, are bounded by the statutory section 3805-035E, and that the commissioner's discretion to have these sales is limited to, you know, to wood that needs to be harvested within 2 years, if it's to maintain its economic value, that it's been killed by fire, etc. So that is the grant of legislative discretion that's being provided by this bill to the commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Other questions from committee members? Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I still think we need to have a sort of longer conversation about expedited timber sales. But before we get off of this discussion with salvage, and going off of what Senator Wilkowski said, so this bill, and I guess this is for the bill's sponsor, but if legal wants to speak to it too. So under on page 7, under section 3805-117, it says, may, without making a written finding of disposal, will serve the best interest of the state, offer it for sale. But, you know, legal has made clear that it's a constitutional obligation to make a best interest finding. So is your vision that the commissioner will make a best interest finding but not put it in writing, or just not make a best interest finding at all?
Dave Stancliffe, staff to Representative Kronk. Our discussions with the commissioner have indicated that his ability and his cognizance with regard to those findings is he will, in fact, do that in writing. He will make that finding in writing, absolutely.
And this doesn't preclude him from a reg package and putting it in regs as well?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dave Stancliffe, that's an important point to bring up. It does not.
Senator Wilkowski?
I'm still trying to wrap my head around this. Why are we saying the commissioner doesn't have to make a written finding when he still plans on making a written finding? Why don't we just leave it the way it is? And this will, I think, solve a lot of everyone's concern about this.
Mr. Chairman, the answer that in our research that has come up, that presented to Representative Kronk, is does the phrase the commissioner is not required to notice an expedited timber sale under the section violate the Constitution? It does not. It's going to be in his discretion under Article 8 of the Constitution and his obligation to notice. I don't think that's escapable.
Follow up, Senator Wilkowski.
So if the commissioner has a constitutional obligation to make a written notice, why would we put in statute that the commissioner doesn't have to make a written notice?
That is for specifically for the salvage sales, correct? Right, and so if you go to the salvage sales and the process, he's going to look at whether or not this dead timber and timber that will lose substantial economic value and timber that is cleared for conversion. He will look at these trees as he does for the current, under the current law for salvage sales, is my understanding, that they do not have to have the same weight of public notice. So these expedited sales will come under that same regime of regulation. So this probably is just clarifying. It's not creating anything new. It's going to be up to the committee on how they look at it.
Senator Dunbar.
So I think we're talking about two separate things here. There's a notice requirement and there's a finding of best interest of the state. And I think it's usually the case that once you find the best interest of the state, you tell the public you did so, and so you might distribute it. But is the issue that the regulations or maybe the statutes that we don't have here about what the notice has to look like or what the best interest finding have to look like, is it too prescriptive and difficult and time-consuming for the commissioner? Because, you know, from my perspective, and I think what you just described to me, is the commissioner is going to do a best interest finding. It's a constitutional obligation to do it. And, you know, today that might just look like an email to someone, but it seems a little bit crazy to me that they wouldn't put that in writing somewhere. And if that's the case, is there a way to sort of amend the statute and not make it too prescriptive, but still make sure that we get that public interest finding in writing?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that would be a question for the legal analysis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Would you like Alpheus to comment on that, or would you like to pose that question to him in an email?
I guess if he
before
is
before the next committee,
if he's able to answer, I guess I would ask: is the statute prescriptive as to what a best interest finding has to look like? I assume it has procedures for notice, but is there a specific legal form that the best interest finding has to take?
Mr. Bullard.
Senator. Members of the committee, this is Alpheus Bullard. Are you able to hear me?
Yes, sir.
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, the existing written best interest finding process is detailed at 3805035E, and it is very particular. It discusses process, timing, and links to public notice requirements. In regard to whether something else can be drafted, the attorneys of Ledge Legal would be happy to draft whatever the members of the committee would like.
Okay. Now we're getting somewhere, Mr. Chair.
Did Okay. All right. Are we done with this section for the, any more questions on this section? Senator Geisel.
Well, just one comment, Mr. Chairman. It says he doesn't have to do the best interest finding, and the statement has been made that this commissioner has said he will be doing this. That's this commissioner. What we're doing is crafting policy regardless of who the commissioner is. So if there's a feeling that it needs to be written down, then it needs to be written down.
Thank you. Comment. No question.
That's
there.
All. No question.
Okay. Okay. Senator, sure. Senator Willikowski.
I'd like to associate myself with those remarks.
Thank you. Any other questions today of the bill sponsor? Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'd like a little more description as to the way the expedited timber sales section differs from the salvage sales. That is to say, if the salvage sales can be used for those prevention activities around places like Tok or any other community, then how does that differ from the expedited process that also says is an area that creates or will create a public safety issue? You know, that portion at least seems to envision the exact same thing. So how would they decide which of those two processes to use?
Mr. Chairman, Dave Stanquist, staff to Representative Kronk on, Roman numeral 4, how does this bill propose to change the salvage process, gets into that very question. And we define the salvage sale process as a disposal of dead timber. It could be killed by nature or activity. Human activity includes things like forest fire, insects, windstorm, firebreaks, and all that. The bill brings all dead timber into the category of salvage sales, which are exempt from flood. Forest lands, you're familiar with the flood, so that's one primary difference. In these situations, the timber no longer has value as a standing tree. In fact, it arguably has negative value as a fire problem. Therefore, receiving any compensation for this dead timber is inherently in the state's best interest. For this reason, the bill proposes to exempt salvage sales from the prescriptive best interest binding outlined in 3805. So the rationale here is we've got timber that's going to be no good. It's maybe a threat. It's a negative economic value to the state, and we're looking at, is this something that we have to go through the whole process on before we deal with it? And this bill attempts to say, in certain instances, under the commissioner's discretion, whichever the commissioner may be, they would not have to, and that speeds the process up. The timeline that we laid out in the last hearing reduces the total time from stump to mill by almost 50%. And that was laid out by Clarence Clark, who is a former forester in the state, now works out of Ketchikan. So he says, you know, and I, if I could, before the meeting ends, this, just so that the committee and you as policymakers have a perspective here, the input into the Tanana Valley State Forest and the current situation is on the state forest alone, 14 public meetings, 3 public open houses, distribution of a brochure by mail, 17 public review meetings. Then under the 5-year schedule, 30-day review public process. And then through the Citizen Advisory Committee, public comment, public comment, public comment, 30-day, 30-day. So while this system may not be a death knell to, in some instances, in managing the forest, expedited hopes to open a few options for getting past some of this process when it's in the state's best interest to do it. That's the crux. And it is confusing for someone does not have the background, A, and both of us, I guess. But that's the best answer I can get.
So the genesis of the bell is you're trying to harvest timber in a timely fashion in a 50% reduced time period to get the value of the damaged timber. That's that it in a nutshell.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Dave Stancliffe, one other important point is at the end of that time period, the Division of Forestry has said, well, we're going to issue timber sales, but it's only going to be 3 years. And so the timber doesn't get cut because it's not a long enough time frame for the financing necessary to move in and create an industry economic zone there. So there is a consideration there as well in terms of the time frames for sales written into the bill. That's the second part.
May I add? Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, in expedited, I mean, we look at the salvage sales, and that, you know, is pretty much the disposal of dead timber. But expedited allows us to manage those for us. Per se, we could look at choke, for an example, and, you know, like, you know, Director Helge said, we have a 300-foot buffer around a lot of choke. You know, while we haven't had a fire there yet, I think it sure makes people feel a lot safer. And why not use those resources versus, okay, we got a fire, we're going to bring bulldozers in, we're going to clear this out. Now we just wasted all that timber. Let's be preemptive. And I want to add something here that before we close, we've been studying, let's say, Sweden's forests, which have doubled in the last 100 years. And just last year alone, they sold $17.4 billion of timber export. We're talking billion. And we have more forests than they do. But they've managed their forests over the last 100 years. And so I think this is what this is for us. It's a first step to begin managing the forest. What if, you know, 30 years from now, Alaska's bringing in $5 billion of export? We're replacing our oil revenue, let alone just in timber exports, in a renewable resource that we can all, you know, hopefully agree to. So I think this is the first step of doing that. But we have a lot of, especially in the interior, I'm not saying South Central or Kenai doesn't have it. We've seen those big fires. But being, you know, preemptive in some of this stuff and using that timber is invaluable to the state. So I think that's what we're trying to refocus here is, like, we do have another resource in that state that could be really valuable for not only our budget, but, you know, for our state, creating the homes that we have, the timber. And I think we'll have some statistics more there, on, especially on how much timber gets burned up that we're not using. And we're spending, you know, $50 million, $75 million a year fighting fires when we could actually be turning it into something valuable. So.
Senator Wilikowski, then I want to come back and make a closing comment.
Just a comment, Mr. Chair. I don't think anybody on this committee is necessarily opposed to what you're saying. I think the concern is there's certainly some notice issues, best interest finding issues, but on the expedited timber sales, the way I'm reading the statute, the commissioner can pretty much declare it anywhere in South Central, anywhere that's, I guess, not a rainforest, and probably even a lot of area in the rainforest, as being eligible for expedited timber sales. And then when that kicks in, it creates a very limited notice to the public. It creates very limited means for the public to go in and bid on that. And so I think that's the concern, and we're just trying to figure out, at least I am trying to figure out, how do you balance that against what you're trying to do.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, that's a good point. And I think for us in 1991, when the Toke Forest Fire started, if it wasn't for an act of God and the winds changing, Toke may not exist today. And at some point, the hillside and Anchorage is going to be the same way. Are we going to be preemptive, or are we going to look back and say, wow, I wish we would have done something? I think that's where we're trying to get you. Let's manage our forests. And your concerns are valid, but I think our lack of managing our forests has brought us to this position. I think we need to refocus our, you know, managing our forests to, you know, not only for, you know, be fire-wise and safe, but use those resources and bring, you know, generate revenue for our state. So I just hope we all work together, because I think we all can't see that vision that we have this incredible resource ahead of us. Maybe some of us will never see this in our lifetime, if we start this program, that's okay that we all know that we started it, and this could be a you know, revenue generator that, you know, far exceeds the oil revenues that we bring in, and great for the future of Alaska. So
I just like to say that I think I stayed up 2 days in 1991. It's a good thing you had a contractor 50 miles down the road that low-boyed equipment around the clock and took every water tanker they had to keep Tope from burning to the ground. So, Senator Giesel and Senator Dunbar.
Sure. I just wanted to comment. You know, Representative Kronk, what you were just describing about maximizing the use of our timber assets, using them for positive construction. I mean, these are all things that mesh with the offset, the carbon offset bill perfectly. I just think this needs a little bit of fixing, right? But I don't think we're against the concept. And it also addresses public safety. So I think it's very positive. We just need to make some adjustments. But thank you for bringing it forward.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for Director Eng, I kind of Representative Kronk brought up two instances. You know, the Tope fire, which I also remember. I was living in Eagle at the time, and as a young child. And then, you know, the prospect of the hillside. I will say, I think if you tried to clear cut or if you tried to harvest a lot of timber on the hillside without any public notice, you'd have a very interesting reaction. But I guess my question is, you know, we have very distinct, I don't know if the term is biome or whatever the term is, you know, the interior, the boreal forest is quite different from Southeast, for example. And I've heard some concerns from Southeast about this bill. Do you manage the forests in those two areas in appreciably different ways? And is there any reason why, you know, part of this bill might be more applicable to one region of Alaska versus another? Or is it truly the case that sort of the whole state is either high fire danger, high beetle kill danger, or both?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, the Anchorage hillside is obviously a sobering example, and there's no chance there will be a 100-acre clear cut in the middle of the Anchorage hillside. It's all private lots within the municipality of Anchorage. But your point is still well taken. It's the wildland-urban interface that will bear the brunt of the damage from a wildfire. And so it's a very, very sobering case example, which we should study. And the Division of Forestry and Fire Protection actually works closely with the Anchorage Fire Department to reestablish and maintain some of the fire breaks that were put in there years ago that are now becoming overgrown. So I think, if nothing else, this is an example of how we need to bring all our resources to bear on the problem. The second part of your question about ecosystems and whether the Southeast Alaska forest type is managed differently from the interior, I think it's safe to say from a fire perspective, they clearly are. You do not have the same fire regime in Ketchikan as you have in Tope. And that is why we have 300-acre fuel breaks around Tope and not around Ketchikan. That said, I think the general principles of forest management are fairly universal. You grow a crop of trees to maturity, you harvest them, and you start a new crop, and there's that to maturity. So the principles remain unchanged. And in addition, of course, insect disease epidemics vary across the state, but they are inherently unpredictable.
Thank you. Senator Kawasaki?
They are, you get insects and disease in the Southeast as well as in the interior, would be the take-home message.
Thank you. Thank
Director Eng. Senator Kawasaki?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And yeah, this is, I just wanted to say, too, for the sponsor of the bill, that you know, Alaska's got 35% of Alaska is forest. It's a lot. We own 15% of the forested land in the United States. It's huge, huge resource. The question is, you know, this exemption from the forest land use plan, I guess it's for Mr. Eng or for the sponsor of the bill, is timber harvest ever part of the forest land use plan? And why would you just, why wouldn't you just modify a forest land use plan, for instance, in the Tenaha Valley Forest, your TOC?
Director Ng, did you hear Senator Kawasaki's question? And then I want to add something onto that question. Who's to say that an expedited sale or a salvage sale might also already be inside a FLUP? Anyway, there's the question. Two questions, his question and mine.
Through the chair, Senator, if I understand the question correctly, a forest land use plan is, by definition, what we do to plan the timber sale. It's the logical follow-up to best interest finding, where the best interest finding determines that the project in general is in the best interest of the state, and then the forest land use plan gets to the specific of how do you implement the timber sale. So even though they're usually done concurrently at the same time, the forest land use plan would in fact, you would in fact have to do the same analysis steps and the same implementation and layout if you did not have a forest land use plan requirement, because these are steps you necessarily have to go through in order to create and implement a timber sale. And if you could repeat the second question, Chair Bishop, I'd appreciate it.
Is there a situation, a hypothetical situation, where there could be a salvage sale on a piece of land that's on a section that's already been through a FLUP in a best interest finding?
I'd like to noodle on that a little bit, Chair Bishop. It's a good question, and I hate to answer off the cuff. I think there's a few layers to that onion, so if you don't mind, I'd like to attack you on that.
Yep, that's fine. Okay. No further questions. We're going to conclude today's meeting. Our next meeting is May 10th, 3:30 p.m. Bills previously scheduled are heard. Thank you, Representative Kronk and Mr. Stancliffe, for attending. And thanks, everybody, for being online. And we are adjourned at 5:04.